So today's peso will be on case 29 in the Wu Meng Quan in the Blue Rock Collection. Case 29 in the Blue Rock Collection. Dai Zhui, it will be gone with the other. Angle's introduction. Fish swimming, the water is disturbed. A bird flying, a feather falls. Host and guest are clearly distinguished. Black and white are sharply divided. It's like a clear mirror on a stand and a bright jewel in the hand. When a man of Han comes, he is reflected. If a man of Ho comes, he is mirrored. Sound is manifest, color is apparent. How will it be like that? See the following. Main subject. A monk asked Dai Zhui, when the Kalpa fires flare up and the great cosmos is destroyed, I wonder, will it perish or will it not perish? Zhui said, it will perish. The monk said, then will it be gone with the other? Zhui said, it will be gone with the other. Seto's verse. Blocked by the double barrier, the monk asked from the heart of the Kalpa fire, wonderful the word, it will be gone with the other. Thousands of miles he wandered in vain, seeking a master. Last night, I came home from sitting. We have our Friday night sit here, and I wanted to write a letter to somebody who was ill before I went to bed, and so I composed the letter, and then I went out to one of the web journals I received, and I was reading this news article. And the news article reported that famous British scientist announced yesterday in the British press that global warming was reality, and he also said that he anticipated the Earth's temperature in the next 100 years would go up by 5 degrees on average, which is, I guess, if you're interested in these issues, that's an astonishing increase. Some people say 2, some people say 3. This man is the advisor to Tony Blair, but he's a very prestigious figure in the world of British science. And this was quite an astonishing announcement. At the same time, I heard a similar report from another person. Just the day before on the radio. And when we hear things like that, it has to make us think, it has to make us stop and think. I guess we have lived through a period that and very stable in terms of climate and geology. Apparently, this report said that the last century, which has been part of a warming trend, saw an increase of 1 degree. So we're looking at 5 degrees in the next century, 1 degree in the last century. And already a number of years have been the hottest on record in recent years. So when we hear something like this, we have to think, we have to stop and think. It's true that we've been in a very stable period, and it's true that if we just go on what's happened in the past, there's nothing to worry about, right? I mean, basically, we've never had a global warming situation before in history of this magnitude. And we have every reason to be skeptical. In fact, I was talking to somebody after I heard the earlier report, and the person said, well, you know, you hear that stuff all the time, end of the world sort of stuff. And this person was just very skeptical. And it makes sense to be skeptical, because after all, so far, everything's going well. But this man was a very distinguished scientist, and he's an advisor to the British government. So he's not what you would call a radical or extreme figure. And he made this announcement in public, and he said, in addition to saying that there would be this 5 degree increase, he also said that this is if we do everything we can now to correct the problem. So that's very scary, a little bit. But maybe not, and maybe my friend is right, and this is all going to be, it's all going to be okay, and this is just an alarmist report. At the same time, or this morning, as I was driving over here, I like to listen to a morning radio program called Living on Earth. As some of you know, I do a lot of driving. I drive all over the state because we have these different Zen groups. And on Sunday morning, I get up and I drive up to Blairstown in the north, and I love to listen to Living on Earth. I usually don't listen to it in the morning during the weekdays, but when I'm traveling like this in the morning, I like to listen to it, and I listened to it this morning on the way over here. And they had a report on the revival of the nuclear industry. This is not nuclear power, these are nuclear weapons. So it turns out that the current administration has decided to refurbish our nuclear arsenal. And what that means is that since the end of the Cold War, we've been taking apart our nuclear weapons, and according to a treaty with the Russians, we've been dismantling them in a public under public surveillance, and the idea is to go from 7,000 warheads, which is what we have in store right now, I think, to something like 2,000. So we've been busily doing this, but the current administration has decided to refurbish. So they want to build new weapons and build new missiles to go with them, and new systems of missiles. The target, apparently, is to produce 120, I may be getting this wrong, but it was an alarming figure, 120 missiles a year. Now, they want to produce 120 of the core radioactive material. They're called pits, like a peach pit. They're made out of plutonium. They're called plutonium pits. I thought that was interesting. You can learn a lot from the radio. And they want to make 120 of these plutonium pits every year. And I assume that means they want to make 120 warheads, but maybe not. But the point is, I found that disturbing. You know? Just as I find the issue of climate change disturbing. I love this world with my whole being. This morning we all got up, and I'm sure you noticed, you know, all the beautiful trees, you know, all the flowers. This morning the room was a little hot, and so we opened the doors and we could sit here and hear the beautiful birds. And it's so precious. So this life is so precious and beautiful. Especially when you take the time to sit down on a cushion, watch the breath, and let the mind become clear and calm. Just beautiful. And this precious world is, you know, in some danger from various directions. And anyway, this is the koan. This is one of our koans in this life, in this time. And this is like a big, big koan. So in a way, you could say that this story of Master Dai Zi is pointing to maybe something similar. A monk asked Dai Zi, when the kelp of fire flares up and the great cosmos is destroyed, will it perish or will it not perish? So this is sort of like a apocalyptic scenario, right? Basically, the monk is asking Master, look, you know, let's say worst case scenario happens. Let's say those 120 warheads get built, and somehow they get fired off at somebody, and then we fire back. If that happens, you know, will it perish along with everything else? Another way to put it would be to say, look, if the Earth increases in temperature by 5 degrees in the next century, it could be really difficult for human beings. Yeah? Probably the whole Arctic ice sheet would disappear. And with that, many beautiful species and many beautiful animals, wonderful life disappears, so maybe forever. Yeah? And it's heartbreaking to think about that. Right? Basically the monk is saying to Master Dai Zi, if all of that goes, if it all goes down the tube, will it go too? Now, it is a very important part of this koan. When we practice Zen, we're cultivating something that's impossible to name. But we hold it in high regard. We can call it Buddha. We can call it enlightenment. We can call it God. We can call it Allah. It's the most precious thing. It's the most precious thing. We have a altar here, and if the electricity were on, our electric candle would be on. And we'd be burning incense in front of our electric candle. And what we're doing is where the candle represents it's the most precious thing, most precious thing. We all have this, I think somewhere in our hearts, we all have this idea or this feeling, this emotion, this state of being, which is the most precious to us. It's a special state, a special idea. It's very, very precious and important. And over the centuries, people have called it various things. And we could call it the Buddha mind, or enlightenment. So when the monk says to Dai Zi, look, I understand that all of these things which exist in time, all of these things that exist in the realm of form, could go, could be destroyed by the kelp of fire, those warheads, or that process of this slower process of greenhouse effect. But you know, this will survive, won't it? Won't it? Now, you know, intellectually we know that the answer probably should be yes. He dies, we should say, don't worry. You know, don't worry. Because this can't be destroyed. This can't be destroyed. So relax. Don't worry so much. But Daiju doesn't say that. He says, yes, it will be destroyed along with everything else. So that's the koan. That's this koan. And maybe this is the koan for the next century. Maybe this is going to be our koan. I have a friend who was somebody I trained with when Genki Roshi first came to Seattle. She's my Dharma sister. Her name is her Dharma name is Kan Shin, her ordination name, and her regular name is Pam Mydell. So Kan Shin Pam Mydell. And when she finished her training with Webb Roshi, she became a peace activist. And so she has a wonderful life. She's led a wonderful life as a peace activist. She's involved in the Green Party in California, and also in the international nuclear disarmament movement. She's involved with an organization, I believe it's called Atomic Mirror, and some other international organizations. They tried to get scientists and intellectuals and leaders to reflect on sort of the situation. Because even though we think the Cold War is over, even though we think that the nuclear weapons are a thing of the past, it's very much present in the future as an issue. As you can see, our own government is building all these nuclear weapons. And, if you think about it, a situation in which the environment is destabilizing because the climate is growing hotter and hotter, and so water is getting scarcer and other precious commodities are harder to get. That situation and nuclear weapons seems like a very bad idea, in a sense. That's like gas is leaking out of your car and you strike a match, right? So it's so wonderful that we're here today, a beautiful spring day, and it's so precious. We don't know what the future holds. You know, 30 years from now, I hope you'll remember this day. And we just don't know. If everything continues the way it's been going, no problem. Right? Maybe we'll all still be coming over here. By then we'll have a biodiesel car, you know. Who knows, maybe they'll fly through the air, you know. And you'll fly into the parking lot. And basically get on the conveyor belt and come over here, you know. And then we'll have a meditation center on campus, and basically it'll be wonderful. And it'll be but may not work out that way. And you know, these moments of calm and joy, maybe you may remember them. It's very precious indeed. You know, things could really spin out of control. When I was a little boy, I lived in Baltimore, Maryland, and we had something known as the Cuban Missile Crisis. Most of you weren't even born then, but at that time, the Soviet Union had brought nuclear weapons to Cuba in ships. They had sent nuclear warheads to Cuba because they were afraid we were going to invade Cuba. And we had a special spy satellites that can see from outer space, and they can see, take photographs, and they noticed these nuclear warheads. So our president at that time, John Kennedy, was a very popular leader, but he was actually rather aggressive. And he called the head of the Russian government up and said, listen, if you don't move those warheads, we're going to go to war with Russia. That's the Soviet Union. And there was a period in I think that this was 1961, if I'm not mistaken. But in our schools, we were all taken on what were called drills, defense drills. And we would all be taken out in the hall, and we were taught how to crouch, get down in a crouching position and cover our heads in case a nuclear attack. Now, you know, this is not going to help. But this is what we were told to do. There was even a little movie we were shown, and it was called Duck and Cover. If you look out the window, it said, if you look out the window and there's a sudden flash, duck and cover. Duck and cover. So we were all trained, and the teacher would blow a little whistle, and we'd all get down, and we'd crouch down and cover, pull our heads down and cover our heads. To duck and cover. And we had drills like this. This was, of course, perfectly useless, right? But it was part of the process of pushing these dangers aside and normalizing them, so people don't pay attention. That's part of this process of domesticating nuclear warfare, making it seem as ordinary as your washing machine. In a way, this is kind of what is happening with global warming now, too. It's like it's too momentous to face, so we domesticate it. You just get the green dish, you get the green towels at the grocery store, and the whole problem is away. And so I remember as a little boy going to sleep at night and hearing, because we lived near a military base, and there were always at night the sound of planes flying overhead. And I always wondered, is that really and truly? This is absolutely the truth. I would lie there at night and think, you know, and I wasn't even afraid because, you know, my mother was in the other room. I was in my bed, and I was thinking, is that the plane that's going to drop the bomb? You know? And for me, the bomb was very abstract. It just meant everything was going to end. Right? Everything was going to end. So this koan is pointing to, like, really big issues, or it could be really big issues. You know, this world is... human beings have reached a threshold of power where they can actually put at risk the survival of the world. And if you're like me and you grew up wondering, is that plane that's going to drop the bomb? And everybody thought it was going to happen. My parents actually had worked out an escape route in case there was an attack. They were going to drive out into Pennsylvania. And of course nobody else thought of that, right? So the highways would be wide open, right? So everybody in New Jersey thinks, I'll get to Pennsylvania, right? To get out on the Garden State, oops, oh, I'll get to Pennsylvania next week. People seriously planned for disaster, right? You know, that this is nuclear war happened. People built shelters in their basement and stocked them with canned goods, right? This kind of thing. So this koan's pointing to like a big issue. You know, this this precious world is in danger, right?
Yeah.
And so we want to protect it. We want to protect it. We want to make it safe. And we want to hold on tight. Hold on tight. We want to protect it. And that's a noble desire, isn't it? When I was a little boy, my grandmother sent me a gift. It was my grandfather's jackknife. I don't know if you know what a jackknife is, but it's a knife that has blades that fold into the body of the knife, and usually it has multiple blades. And my grandfather was a farmer in upstate New York, and I loved him dearly. He died when I was just a little boy, and my grandmother sent me his knife, which was like this precious item, because my grandfather, whom I loved, had owned it. And when I got it, instead of putting it in my pocket and carrying it around, I remember I wrapped it in toilet paper, and I put it in my drawer, because I wanted to protect it. And I wanted to protect that knife. It was too sacred to let go of, to take out, and you know, to drop it, or to lose it. So I actually like wrapped it in a bunch of toilet paper and stuck it in my drawer. And I remember years later, my mother was going through my drawer, and she said, "What is this? And why is this wrapped in toilet paper?" And I didn't even try to explain. You know, I'm not sure I could have explained that, but I realized that what I was doing was trying to protect this sacred thing. You know. And I'm very glad that there are people like my friend, my Dharma sister, Tan Sien Meidel, working for peace. Very important. You know, I hope we all will do, you know, whatever we can to protect and this precious world. But the koan is very interesting, isn't it? Because Daizui doesn't say, "Don't worry, it'll survive. You know, there'll always be something that survives." And he doesn't say, "Get out there and don't stop those talpa fires. You know, stop those talpa fires. Put them out." And he doesn't say that. It's interesting. His answer is very, very haunting, but an answer. It's like, okay, global warming is going to turn Earth into pressure cookers. Is the most precious thing going to be destroyed? And Daizui doesn't say, "Get out there and stop global warming. It's got to do something." And he doesn't say, "Don't worry, the most precious thing can't be destroyed, because, yes, it's all going to be destroyed." Doesn't have to be, this koan doesn't have to be, however, about big issues. It doesn't have to be about the big questions. Because little questions and big questions are very, very interrelated, in my opinion. Some of you might know, my mother is suffering from Alzheimer's disease. I have to tell you that my mother has always been pretty much my best friend. Now, I would say my wife is my best friend now. I'd say that especially if she was around. And she is really a wonderful person. But, you know, long before I knew my wife, I could go to my mother and I could say, "Mom, you know, something's really bothering me." And my mother was a very, very kind and patient person. I think that any good qualities I have, I really owe to my mother. And she was such a good person. She would read books to me. You know, when I was a little kid, I used to have like chronic health problems, believe it or not. I had chronic bronchitis. It was just year after year I would sit. Sometimes I would have to be in the bathroom with a vaporizer, with the machine that produces, because I just couldn't breathe, and I couldn't go to school all the time. So my mother used to just sit there and read me these books. She'd just, from cover to cover, you know, that were just wonderful books, Treasure Island. And, you know, when I was sick, she was always there. And sometimes she had to work very hard. She was a court reporter, and she had a little office in our apartment. She was a heavy smoker, and she would just close herself up in that office and transcribe, shorthand documents all day. The door would open and the smoke would come out, and my mother would come out. But she worked very hard, but she was so kind to me, and just a generally kind person. So it's difficult to see my mother slipping away, right? Slipping away. It's hard because I want to hold on to my precious mother, who was so kind to me and was and defended me and took care of me when I was weak and sick. So it doesn't have to be about the earth. It can be about your mother. It can be about your brother. My mother's slipping away like piece by piece. Some days she's really lucid, and some days she doesn't even remember, the town we used to live in. She doesn't even remember, what her own sister looked like on some days. So, we want to hold on to this most precious thing, most precious thing. My feeling is that part of our problem, big part of our problem, really the reason we have so many of these problems is that we want to hold on. We want to hold on. And this gets us, I think, like a lot of trouble. Right? This is like holding on is such a natural thing. If you love something, you care about something. You want to hold on, you want to protect. But actually, that could be the cause of our problems. It's strange to think in this way, but probably, my guess is that many of you are not fans of our current president. But the truth is, he asked whether you agree with him or not, and let me just be honest with you, I don't. But whether you agree with him or not, he actually has good motive. Really. I mean, actually, yes. Why would President Bush start up a nuclear development a program to refurbish our nuclear arsenal? Why in the world? It could be he has sinister motives, right? But I actually think his motives are to protect, right? He sees an unstable future, and so he's going to build all these warheads to protect what he values the most, which is the United States. Nobody really values the United States. That's an abstraction. What we really value are the town we grew up in, the people we love, the job we're doing, the place we work, more concrete things, yeah? So whether you like George Bush or not, he's trying to protect something precious, which is this thing we call the United States. And he's so frightened that it's going to be taken away, that he's building these incredibly terrible destructive weapons that indeed could take everything away. Mm-hmm. This is really like the human condition, I think. It's really like the human condition, is that in our desire to protect, we actually put at risk life itself. If you look at the natural world, if you look at the natural world, one of the things that has to impress you is the changefulness of everything. Right? I mean, only a couple of weeks ago, the ground was frozen hard, and at night it was in the 20s. Right? And now, suddenly, flowers are coming up out of the ground, birds are singing, trees are... It seems as though I started yesterday working at my desk, and by the end of the day, it looked as though the leaves had actually grown on the trees. I think it's true. I think the trees actually were greener at the end of the day than they were in the morning. That's amazing, right? And yet we know that summer is going to come, and it's going to be beautiful and lush. And then basically fall is going to come, and then the ground is going to be cold and hard. It'll be 10 degrees. Everything we love is going to disappear. And I think this is nature's way. And this is essential to life. You could put it this way. This is kind of a strange way to put it, but do you want to know the secret of life? I think the secret of life is death. Now that seems like a terrible thing to say. What a bummer. What a downer. But think about it. It's one whole thing, right? It's like yin and yang. One whole thing. Everything rises out of nothing. And everything has to return to nothing. This is like terrifying. Unless you make a friend out of nothing. And that's what we're doing on the cushion. But people are terrified of nothing. This precious thing, my precious thing is gone. My precious one is gone. There isn't a single family in America that hasn't been touched by death. There isn't a single person who will be alive in 100 years. Whether the whole world disappears or not, not a single being alive now will be here in 100 years. And this is as it has to be. And when we try to stop it, see, I think we get into trouble when we can't accept that. And we try to stop it. It's like, if you ask me, what I think our civilization has tried to do is to create a deathless world. In the old days, people confronted death all the time. And you had to deal with it. You had to say, okay, this is part of existence. This is the left hand, and life is the right hand. Right? And this gave you a bigger perspective. But we try to create like a deathless world, a world where death is all out of view, but also kind of like a permanent. Everything we do is try to like to create like a permanent world. Now, this is an unchanging world. And yet, a change is inevitable. You put concrete down on the ground. But you know what? The concrete's going to break up, and weeds are going to come up through the concrete. There's nothing you can do to stop it. You can't make a deathless world. You can't make a permanent world. You can get all the nuclear warheads in the universe, but you won't be safe. And I think wisdom is learning to live with that. You wouldn't build the warhead if you weren't terrified. Of this nothing. But we Zen people are like, we make a friend out of nothing. We make nothingness like a guest in our heart. And the amazing thing about it, too, is that it doesn't, that when you do that, it's like everything springs to life.
an astonishing thing. You know, you sit on the cushion in blankness and darkness for, you know, I don't know, a couple of years, 3 years. When your teacher gives you the mu koan, you start working with this mu koan, you start entering this blankness and darkness, and you just sit there. And, you know, this blankness, this darkness, this is something nobody wants to encounter. Right? This is the thing we run away from. This is the thing that causes us to build the nuclear warhead. This is the thing that, you know, that we don't like. You know, it shows that we're mortal, we're temporary, you know. And yet you sit there in that blankness, God, day in and day out, day in and day out. And one day, you know, it's the most beautiful thing. It's like this life energy springs up in your heart, just bursts out of your chest. This is the secret of the Mu Koan, right? Out of this emptiness, all this beautiful, beautiful life arises. I was reading this article the other day about quantum physics, and it was just the most interesting thing. I don't know if I can share it with you now, because I'm not sure if I can read it here in the dark. This is a Stephen Hawking, you know, the famous physicist. Hawking said, there are something like 10 million, 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 that's one with 85 zeros after, particles in the region of the universe that we observe. Where did they all come from? The answer is that in quantum theory, particles can be created out of energy in the form of particle-antiparticle pairs. Sounds like yin and yang, doesn't it? But that just raises the question of where the energy came from. The answer is that the total energy of the universe, get a load of this, is exactly zero. Shouldn't it? The matter in the universe is made out of positive energy. However, the matter is all attracting itself by gravity. Two pieces of matter that are close to each other have less energy than the same two pieces a long way apart, because you have to expand energy to separate them against the gravitational force that is pulling them together. Thus, in a sense, the gravitational field has negative energy. In the case of a universe that is approximately uniform in space, one can show that this negative gravitational energy exactly cancels the positive energy represented by the matter. So the total energy of the universe is zero. That's fascinating and very important. Apparently, there's this phenomenon which is called vacuum fluctuation. When physicists try to create a vacuum chamber, or they create a vacuum in which there is no energy, the strangest thing happens, because in that chamber, when there's no energy, zero, all of a sudden, these particles appear literally out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. They shouldn't be there, because there isn't any energy in the system to cause their existence. But there they are. This is called vacuum fluctuation. And some people, this is not mainstream physics, but apparently some people say the universe itself
may be like multiple, a product of multiple vacuum fluctuations all happening at the same time. So very, very important, I think, for us to maybe not be so afraid of this emptiness. Now, what happens when you live in emptiness is a very curious thing, because if you dwell in emptiness long enough, you encounter this beautiful life energy just welling up out of nothing, out of nothing. And when I first heard that my mother had Alzheimer's, I did what I always do. I sat down on my cushion and I went right into Mushin. And of course, as I sat in Mushin, all of these memories flooded into my mind. I thought, for example, of all the time. I remembered things I'd forgotten for years about how kind my mother was to me, how good she was, and how patient, how amazingly patient she was with me. And I could remember things. I could remember the color of her sweater when I was 5 years old. It's amazing. I can remember that sweater. And, of course, as I'm thinking these things, my heart is kind of breaking. But, I sat there and sat there and was sad about this for a long time. And then at some point, this joy, it's just like joy, just exploded. It's like life comes back. Life comes back. Life comes back. This is like the rhythm of life if you live in the Chan way, in the Zen way. Everything we love is going to go away. It's going to go. It's going to die, going to disappear. And I think we create more violence, we create more destruction when we try to stop it. We try to stop it. And there's a way of living in harmony. I think there is a way of living in harmony with things. And it begins with accepting, everything is going to go away. But out of this emptiness, life comes, out of a vacuum, these molecules start springing into existence. That's astonishing, for these particles start springing into existence. So you go from moment to moment. It's like everything disappears and then everything comes back. Everything disappears. Now, this is like the rhythm of practice. And actually, if you sit long enough, you see that just sitting on the cushion, you realize the universe is disappearing and re-arising moment by moment, moment by moment, moment by moment. And the strangest thing is that when this happens, when this happens, each moment becomes absolutely, infinitely precious. And let's face it, you have to do some sitting for this to happen. This is just an abstract idea if you don't do the practice. But, I have certainly experienced this very intensely myself. I've been at retreats where, I get up in the morning and it's just like everything is just like crystalline, beautiful, sweet, precious, just perfect, and so alive, right? This is in Mahayana tradition. This state of mind is often represented by what's called Indra's net. Indra's net. Indra's net is like this magical net, which is the universe. And it extends infinitely in all directions. And at the center of each intersection of the net, there's like a clear jewel. Right? Clear jewel. And so if you look at the net, at every intersection, for as long as you can see in each direction, it's like this clear jewel. And when you look at the jewel, it's reflecting all the other jewels. This is life and death together, one whole thing. And every moment becomes perfect if we can live this way. If we can live with nothing. Live with nothing. Every something becomes just precious and wonderful. And so my feeling is that this is, you might say, well, what does this have to do with gold? What does this have to do with nuclear disarmament? But my own personal feeling is that it has to start with you. You can make all the speeches you want, you can pass all the laws, but unless you change your own heart, nothing is going to change. People have tried to create societies societies where people are selfless, and compassionate. Many early experiments in communist government were based on this idea that people could be made into less selfish beings, right? And laws were written, governments were established, and generally these experiments turn out badly because you haven't really changed the human heart. So if we look at the future and we say, could be rough, I've got to do something, by all means do whatever you can, but please start with yourself. This practice is really precious, really important. If you can't end the violence in your own heart, if you can't end the destructiveness in your own heart, there's little chance that you're going to end it in the world. Right? And the roots of this destructiveness, I think, go very deep. I think it's like elemental. The irony is the destructiveness has like this very good root. It's the love of the world. Mr. Bush is building nuclear bombs because he loves the world. That's so twisted, isn't it? And basically people got us into this environmental mess for the same reason. Who doesn't like driving this car? It's beautiful. You have to live with a life of limits. You have to live with a life of limits. Everything has a limit. I can't see all the countries in the world if there aren't jet planes. And I'll just have to be content with this jewel in the net. And that means, though, that I have to admit that I'm only going to live for a little while. I'm only going to see a few things in my life. I'm only going to be just this and not that. That's just like accepting death, accepting my limit, accepting my, I'm going to be here and now I'm going to be gone. That's just where I am. But I think it's a beautiful road. It's a beautiful road. So Master Gajri is telling us something really important. What's the worst thing that could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? I don't get my PhD. Right? I don't get my PhD. It's the end of the world, right? And you go to Master Gajri and you say, Master Gajri, I'm not going to get my PhD. Is it the end of the world? And you want Master Gajri to say, no. I'll give you a magic mantra and you can say it and you'll get your PhD. Right? He says, no. It's the end of the world. Yes, it's the end of the world. Can you embrace the end of the world? And if you embrace the end of the world long enough, this joy springs up in your heart. Right? This life, indestructible life, springs up in your heart. From your heart. Not an abstraction. It's that the particles come out of the vacuum in your heart.
the worst thing that can happen. My beautiful mother, my wonderful mother is going to die. I want to go to Master Daiji and say, but surely, she'll live on, won't she? Won't she? No. It's all going to be gone. Ah! Sit there with that, and sit there with that, and then boom. Life explodes in your heart. Death and life. We Zen people learn how, we say, die on the cushion. We're not kidding. We're not kidding. And you can say, well, how morbid? You say, how morbid? How is that? Not, that's the fear. See, that's your fear talking. Go ahead. Die on the cushion and see what happens. What happens is like the flowers in spring, blue skies, clouds. Where did this come from? Out of nothing itself. Fish swimming, the water is disturbed. A bird flying, a feather falls. Host and guest are clearly distinguished. Black and white are sharply divided. It is like a clear mirror on the sand and a bright jewel in the hand. When a man of Han appears, he is reflected. When a man of Ho comes, he is mirrored. We're here for a minute and then we're gone. We're all here for a minute, but oh, so beautiful. So beautiful. This is Buddha itself. Here and gone. Here and gone. Here and gone. How precious this becomes. Like how precious this moment becomes. Main subject. A monk asked Daijui, when the talc of fire flares up, and the great cosmos is destroyed, I wonder, will it perish? Or will it not perish? Jesus said, it will perish. It'll perish. So we want life everlasting, but that, I'm sorry, that is impossible. Life and death are everlasting. Something and nothing, they're everlasting, but not, you can't, death everlasting is impossible. They create a vacuum, and what do you know? Life. And life everlasting is also impossible. Also impossible. It will be gone with the other. That shows verse. Locked by the double barrier, the monk asks from the heart of the talc of fire, wonderful the words, it will be gone with the other. Thousands of miles he wandered in vain, seeking a map.